Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, here we are again. We do this every 1 o'clock in the morning. We want to try to highlight some of the good things that are going on around us. And sometimes it's things that are good to you or your neighbors or whatever it may be. A family member, a kid, someone you care about. Something good happened. Could be something big or small. 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120. I got a couple of good things I want to share. And the first one was one that is kind of indirectly a good thing. It's a story out of Italy. I saw this on the local.it. So IT meaning, I think, Italy. And the Italy's Ministry of Culture has put a century worth of Italian popular music online for free. So you can go get it right now. I think it's canzoneitaliana.it. You might have to do a Google search for it. So you'll find some 200,000 tracks available for you to stream to your heart's content, courtesy of Italy's Central Institute of Sound, an audiovisual heritage. I just think this is wonderful. Starting back in 1900s all the way to 2000. And you know, it's kind of a beautiful thing for me, because it reminds me back when I was growing up. It's beautiful. Luciano Pavarotti. No idea what he's saying. Doesn't matter. So every time I would go and eat at my grandma's house, this is what she would put on. She'd put on her favorite Pavarotti album. Especially if it was a special meal like a Thanksgiving or a Easter or Christmas or something like that. So whenever the family was there, that's all we used to listen to was Pavarotti. That's the only thing we'd have on in the house. No TV, no nothing else. It was just Pavarotti. And I remember some of these really old albums she used to have, and she would wear those things down and play them and play them and play them. And she would always play the same ones, but man, I don't know why she liked him so much. I mean, my grandma was Italian. I remember one time Pavarotti came to Detroit, and it was like the greatest thing ever was to go see him live. What a voice this guy had. But it wasn't until I saw this article that I went back and looked and started to search some of the music in there. And it was like that song took me right back. It was so weird. It was like going back to grandma's house and sitting down and eating a meal again. It's really hard to explain. I just don't know why. This brought back so many memories, but man, what a cool thing. Too good. Too good. Just amazing how sometimes little things like that. To me, that's something good. You can go check it out if you don't have to look up Pavarotti. In fact, they have their own playlist that you can go back and listen to, curated for you to enjoy. Just do a quick search of Italian classic songs online for free, and there it is. There's another story that popped up on the BBC that I thought was really good. It's talking about plant-based plastics to help waste pollution, which I think is a great thing. It says, we know that plastic waste is a problem with our planet. Only 9% is recycled. Burning it contributes to greenhouse gas emissions and global warming, things like that. So could plant-based alternatives be better for recycling? So when you toss something that could be recycled in the trash, which, you know, a lot of people do, I do, I mean, whatever it is, it takes upwards of 1,000 years to fully degrade. That takes a long time, 1,000 years. So could you imagine if they start changing the way that they put these together? There's a company called Biome Bioplastics. They say many consumers buy their cups in good faith thinking they could be recycled, but they really can't. But most single-use containers, think about when you go out to fast food, or if you get a coffee from a coffee shop, things like that, or the straws that are there, or the little sleeves that are on it. Not everything can be recycled. You might throw them in the recycling bin, but not everything's recycled. Coffee cups, I mean, that's like a big part of it. But this company is starting to look at some of the other materials that they could use in order to make these cups. A bioplastic that's fully biodegradable and also disposable, either in a paper recycling or food waste bin. So the cup's not yet on the market, but they have a number of retailers that want to do it. I think this is a good thing, because what it's essentially saying is that we're not trying to force you to do something you don't want to do or won't do or don't understand. Because when it comes to recycling, there's so many different types of things you can recycle. You're like, okay, you can't put it here, but you can't put it here, but you can't do it. And it's impossible to decode. If it was just as simple as, if it's plastic, put it here. If it's a can, put it here. If it's trash, put it there. If it's just as simple as that, I think more people would do it. But still, you know, probably people don't even know there's different types of recycling, even for some of the most simple things like plastics and cans. And if you don't read the label, you wouldn't know any better. So if you could make it easier, people don't have to change their habits. It's better for the environment. It's all wins. All wins. You know, if you want to try to cut down on some of the landfill waste, and these things biodegrade quicker, and you don't have to worry about it being there for 1,000 years, you know, we got issues where all this waste is going to go. It can help the environment. It can help at least the strain on the environment, and you don't have to do anything different. Perfect. Big win. Says it's not feasible to get rid of plastics completely, but instead replace some of the petroleum-based plastic with biopolymers delivered from plant-based sources, and then it doesn't have to stick around for 1,000 years. This is good. This is what we should be doing. What we shouldn't be doing is saying, okay, we as the government will punish you because you couldn't figure out where to put that can when you're done using it, or that bottle, or that cup, or whatever it is. You know, forget about the people selling it to you. You know, you don't know where to put it afterwards. We're going to punish you for it. Instead, the company comes up with a solution where you don't have to be too actively searching for this. You can do the easiest thing to you. Toss it where you'd normally toss it. It's fine wherever it goes, and it disappears in several years as opposed to 1,000 years. It doesn't emit these greenhouse gases or whatever. It doesn't hurt the environment. Perfect. You know, this is what we should be looking at, more solutions of things like this. That's why I'm not opposed to renewable energy, things like solar, where people are doing the solar, or if you want to talk about electric cars. This is, don't try to force people to get these things. What you should ultimately be doing is trying to get the cost down, giving the people the option. And if it's a good option, they'll take it. That's how the market works. That's how we should be doing these things. Shouldn't be forcing people into this stuff they don't want to be in. You know, you shouldn't be forcing people to, with your tax money, giving a bunch of money to like companies like Solyndra that'll fail. You know, let Elon Musk, who's doing it on his own, even though he has some incentive, but he's still doing it as a company. Let them revolutionize this sort of thing. Bring it to market, and then let people decide if they want to buy it or not. That's what I like to see. It should be fine with cups, too, so good thing for that. The startup Bio Collection breaks down some of the other things that they're doing, but, you know, for the most part, I don't think people care. I think as long as I'm allowed to do what I want to do, you know, it's the same cost, I'm fine with it, or cheaper, even better. Something good happened to you? Is there a good story you would like to share? 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Overnight America continues. In a little bit, I'm going to be airing an interview. It's a documentary that's coming out tomorrow night. You know, technically it is Tuesday here in St. Louis, but it's February 14th. It's Valentine's Day. And there's a documentary called He Lied About Everything. Executive producer Pamela Deutsch will be joining us to talk about that crazy, wild story. Now, let me just tell you a little bit about this wild story. You're not going to believe it. So there was an NBC producer that was going overseas to Italy to do a report and a story on this Italian doctor who was putting together tracheas or esophaguses or something. I don't know what it was, but he was doing these surgeries that were supposed to be revolutionary. So they were going to go do this story on him. The NBC producer and this doctor, they fall in love. Aww. And they were going to get married. Aww. And even cuter, the doctor wanted to plan everything in Italy. Aww. Oh, what a heartthrob. So cute. 2 months before the wedding, she started to realize things weren't adding up. For example, he was talking about the guest list of people that were going to be at the wedding. People like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. and John Legend was going to play the music for the wedding, and the Pope was going to officiate the wedding. The Pope. The Pope. She didn't figure it out until the very end, what, 2 months before the wedding, when she realized, wait a minute, I can look up the Pope's schedule. Wait a minute. He's not going to be in Italy. Wait a minute. He's a liar. Wait till you hear this story. What a crazy story. So that's going to be coming up in a documentary they're airing on Discovery tomorrow night. You're going to want to hear this. Did you see earlier today that the official portrait of President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama were unveiled at the Smithsonian's National Portrait Gallery? The painting was done by a Baltimore artist, Amy Sherald, known for her social justice painting style. Yeah, boy, I don't know. Like, if I were to commission her to do a painting of me, and apparently there was a lot of people that they screened, different artists and different styles. So I feel like the Obamas knew exactly what they were getting. But if they were to unveil this, I would look at it and say, wait a minute, that doesn't even look like me. So part of the unveiling is them looking at it. All the presidents and first ladies have their portraits done and hung in the portrait gallery there. So they get to have some discretion on how they do it. And I'm looking at the picture of Michelle Obama. It's her sitting down with a long dress, and she's got one arm over a knee and the other arm like on her wrist, holding up kind of like with her fist underneath her chin. And truthfully, if you were to tell me that was Michelle Obama without knowing the story, I would say, yeah, right. Yeah, right. You know, they were there and they were talking about this sort of thing. I guess they like it. Some people on Twitter were saying, missing Michelle Obama in this apparent portrait of Michelle Obama. They had several artists they interviewed, and she liked Sherald's because of all the time they spent together. People on were not buying it. I also read, what did someone tell me that? I didn't know if this was a joke or not. I think this was a legitimate news source that I read this in. Did President Obama really request that when they did his portrait, they showed a little bit extra favor to his larger ears? I think he wanted him to tone it down a little. Well, here's them talking about it. Oh,
I am not somebody who's a great subject. I don't like posing. I get impatient. I look at my watch. I think this must be done. One of those pictures must have worked. Why has this taken so long? So it's pretty torturous trying to just take a picture of me, much less paint a portrait.
Yep. And here's another thing where you try to get some changes. Maybe this is it.
I mean, there were a number of issues that we were trying to negotiate. I tried to negotiate less gray hair. And Kahene's artistic integrity would not allow him to do what I asked. I tried to negotiate smaller ears. Struck out on that as well.
So he had a different artist, it sounds like, from Michelle Obama who did the different one. That's got to be a big honor of a president of the United States ask you to paint a portrait of them. What an honor that is. President Obama again on this.
Maybe the one area where there were some concessions was, as I said before, Kahende's art often takes ordinary people and elevates them, lifts them up.
And let me give you the idea of the portrait. So what you have is the president sitting down, and he's in front of what looks like left field in Boston. Yeah, it's almost like at Wrigley almost. Like, what's, if you look at it, it's just a bunch of ivy behind him. And it's like, why would he pick that for a presidential portrait? You know, I understand you want to have some artistic type of, you know, you want to be trendy in that way, and you want to be remembered in a way you want to be remembered. But it's like, I don't know. You could have done a little better.
And puts them in these fairly elaborate settings. And so his initial impulse maybe in the work was to also elevate me and put me in these settings with, you know, partridges and scepters and thrones and chiffarobes and mounting me on horses. And I had to explain that I've got enough political problems without you making me look like Napoleon.
See, that's funny. That's funny. So the portraits, people online were Disapproving, we'll put it at that. That's the nicest way to put it. Disapproving of these photos. But you know what? Ultimately, who cares? If the Obamas got what they wanted out of it and they're happy with it, that's kind of their deal, right? That's their deal. They can pick what they like. That's what America's all about. You get to pick what you like. They get to pick what they like. I still think the priceless portrait, which I purchased at Goodwill over the weekend, far superior than anything that was done from the Obamas. Oh, boy, far superior. By the way, producer Ben, did you see that picture I bought at Goodwill over the weekend? That's art. That is priceless art. Go to at Ryan Recker on Twitter. I posted a photo of it a little bit earlier today as I hung it up inside my office where it has the proper lighting. There's a dedicated light that shines on it, so it's always looking good. I mean, we're talking about, I did not go cheap on this beautiful portrait, which I purchased at Goodwill, for a very reasonable price. And it's one of my best purchases ever at a Goodwill. So if you want to see a picture of that, at Ryan Recker. You know, there's something else that I saw that I wanted to share. Did you know your Facebook post could get you sued? Thanks to a recent Indiana court decision. This is from the Indy Star. Indiana Court of Appeals upheld a decision to award $6,000 to a Scott County woman who said she was libeled on a Facebook post that accused her of stealing a truck. The truck was later found at a church parking lot. It was not stolen. But apparently someone said, "You stole my truck." How many people saw it? 11 people liked it. 8 comments. That's all it took. And a lawyer sued the person that posted that. The attorney in Indiana said that this is the first reported case in which someone received a cash settlement for being libeled on Facebook. He claimed that as cases like this become more common, even those who like or comment on such a post could be held liable, which is insane to me. If you share or like or comment on something that you didn't say, that you would be responsible for someone else's words. To me, that is insane, number one. Number two, yeah, you can get in trouble for saying something that's not true. You got to be very careful how you use your words. So the Indianapolis Star, the Indy Star, had a couple of comments for you. So if you're on social media and you're mouthing off about people, you need to be careful. Why? Here's something that you can't do. Let's define libel. Said it's basically slander you write down, a more refined brand of defamation. A state law governs libel, so despite what the president says, he has a little control over it. Oh, look at that. The Indy Star throwing a little jab, a kidney shot at President Trump, who has nothing to do with this article. You want to know why we talk about media the way we do? Seriously, they have to put a jab at the president when this article has nothing to do with him? Here's what else they said what you can do. There's one sect of the population you can libel: dead people. Wonderful. You can't ruin a dead person's reputation because they're, you know, dead and they don't have any reputations anymore. So feel free to go ahead and libel as many dead people as you want. Because you know what they say? Speak ill of the dead. Also, there's more leeway when it comes to public officials and celebrities. The higher standard for providing defamation would also apply to private citizens if the supposedly libelous statement was made in pursuit of a matter of public concern. So satire and parody are, of course, protected. Satire and parody. Maybe that's your argument. But the gist, if a non-deranged person can understand your statement isn't meant to be serious, you're in the clear. That's when it comes to the parody or what's protected in satire. So keep that in mind. When you go online, you can say mean things, but if you say something that's a lie and you're accusing someone of something, you got to be very, 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 very careful. Very careful. Journalists are told over and over and over that the best protection against libel is the truth. So keep that in mind, too. Now, you may have accusations. You may believe certain things. But if you go out and say something that's not true and you're accusing someone, especially if it's a crime, like in the case of Indiana, you stole my truck, the person doesn't like it. That's all it takes is one lawyer to take on that case and boom, you're in court. Yeah, that sounds great. Coming up next, there's a documentary that's coming out. This is pretty interesting, called He Lied About Everything. It premieres on Discovery tomorrow night, Wednesday, February 14th, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Joining us is the executive producer of that documentary, Pamela Deutsch, on Overnight America, KMOX. Joining us now, the documentary He Lied About Everything, premiering this Wednesday, February 14th. It's not quite your typical date night documentary, but it's on Discovery starting at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Joining us now is executive producer Pamela Deutsch. Thanks for joining us on Overnight America.
Thanks for having me. We're really excited to roll out our special Valentine's Day fair this week.
Valentine's Day is the right time to tell this story. It's Benita Alexander and her fiancé, Paolo Macarini. Did I say that right? Because it's hard to say his name. But it's a wild ride these two went on.
Indeed, indeed. This is essentially a love story, but because we're Investigation Discovery, there's a twist. And it's a pretty big one in this case. And it all really begins with a news producer, Benita Alexander. She is working on an hour for NBC News about regenerative medicine. And mm-hmm. in the process, she meets this very dashing surgeon, Paolo Macchiarini, and they fall in love. And before long, they're engaged and planning their wedding. Ooh. And when they're about 2 months out, she starts seeing a few little red flags. And what she then uncovers really sort of changes everything. And to say he's living a double life doesn't quite even really measure up. It's the lies this guy was telling were just pretty epic. And so she goes on sort of a journey of discovery to figure out who this person is.
Oh, boy. How often does this happen? Like, let's say a journalist or a producer or a documentary, anyone, they go and they film. Do they ever get so close to their subjects? Things like this happen a lot?
You know, it's. I think for journalists, it's frowned on generally, and certainly Benita will admit to that. I think you know, if you actually see the original hour she was working on, it's not hard to understand why she fell for him. They waited until production was done to kind of come out publicly as a couple. But I think when you're working very closely together over a period of months, and in particular, this was a very emotional subject with a lot of sick children. So he really, I get it.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
When did she have that moment where this is too good to be true? Like, when did she start to feel that way?
Well, they were, I think, about 8 weeks from the wedding date. He had offered to, he wanted to do all of the planning himself. So she had to sort of, sit on her hands and kind of take a leap of faith. So they were going to get married in Italy. He had a really auspicious guest list that included Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, Elton John, mm-hmm. and... according to Paolo, Pope Francis was going to perform the nuptials.
Man, you're really shooting for the stars there if you're telling lies. That's a big one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it sort of started slowly and gradually. And if you watch the film, you get a sense of really why, why she believed him. He was, in a sense, this larger-than-life figure. He was doing these incredible surgeries that involved, growing or kind of reproducing artificial tracheas in the lab mm-hmm. and transplanting them into people. So, everything about this man was larger than life. So I think, when this happened, she took it in stride. And then, again, like 8 weeks before they were supposed to be wed, she found out that Pope Francis was actually going to be in South America at the time that he was supposedly in Italy performing the wedding. So that was sort of the first big red flag, and that sort of opened up a whole big can of worms. And then it sort of, became a big watershed moment. And ultimately, Benita realized and found out that he wasn't, in fact, divorced from his first wife.
Mm-hmm.
So she sets off to on a fact-finding mission and to, ultimately confront him. And she travels to 5 or 6 different countries in search of him and finds out all sorts of things along the way.
Normally, I would think someone with a background like that would have done the background check right up front, as in they would have had all this information.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why this is so dramatic, because she's an investigative journalist. And if someone like that can fall for it, I don't know where that leaves the rest.
Well, what about this guy? So Paolo Macchiarini, did he have photoshopped pictures of himself with like the Pope to try to convince her? Or like, was there any proof around that this could be legit?
It's an interesting, I don't think that there were personal pictures, but as, you know, he sort of lived this kind of cagey life. He wouldn't, you know, he was traveling internationally quite a bit. He was working with this institute in Sweden, the Karolinska Institute, that actually issues the Nobel Prizes. Mm. So there was just, there was so much substance, or so she thought, behind his work that she just never questioned his credibility. And ultimately, he sort of told her, you know, I have to keep this quiet. I'm one of a few, a list of a few elite doctors around the world that, you know, works on very important dignitaries. So in her mind, you know, there were no pictures, and it was something that he needed to be discreet about.
Uh-huh. You know, if you want to feel good about your relationship, this is a great documentary to watch on Valentine's Day. You know, as a executive producer, by the way, in Discovery is going to be premiering this documentary, He Lied About Everything, Wednesday night, February 14th, 8 Eastern, 7 Central. Did you ever ask yourself, under the circumstances, would you have fallen for this person? Like, did you go through that with yourself and say, would I have fallen for this?
You know, I've got to wonder. I have to tell you, I've been with ID for almost a decade now, and I'd like to think that I know the red flags at this point. I've seen a lot of programming about people living double lives and imposters and con artists. But again, you know, I think when these people, the way that these people operate, they tend to go for, you know, the person who's a little bit vulnerable. And at the time that this happened, Benita, who was divorced, her ex-husband and the father of her daughter was dying of cancer. So she was really emotionally raw. In comes this dashing surgeon who becomes like a real, you know, father figure to her daughter very quickly. And I think, you know, he just sort of took advantage of that emotional vulnerability. You know, it's like the Nile crocodile and the wildebeest. Go for the easy prey. So I think, you know, that's something to look for. You know, I think you see it again and again in these kinds of stories that they sense the vulnerability and go in for the kill.
Yep. Get your popcorn ready for this one. This is really fascinating. The documentary, He Lied About Everything, premiering on Discovery Wednesday night. Perfect Valentine's Day date night. 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. Executive producer Pamela Deutsch, thank you so much for sharing this story here on Overnight America.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I'm watching right now some highlights on the Olympics. It's pretty cool to see ice hockey going on right now. I think this is women's ice hockey, but they're showing some Canada versus Finland. It looks like it's in the first period, just started, so that's pretty neat. Live Olympic coverage. I always like the live stuff that happens through the overnight. Doesn't happen too often, so I'll take it when I can get it. Another segment at Overnight America coming up next. If you want to comment about something, you can. We'll keep the text line open, too. 314-436-7900 on Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm your host, Ryan Recker. I just had a text message from someone that wanted me to check out this artist that Michelle Obama used for her portrait. So I'm going to go through some of the artwork. So he's saying that there might have been some controversial things that this person's painted in the past. Her name is Amy Sherald, S-H-E-R-A-L-D. So I'm going to go look through some of this. I'm kind of curious what this may be. But, you know, when it comes to these paintings, I guess they can depict themselves how they want. But I think you'd want to try to avoid using a controversial person painting you, right? Or maybe not. Let me go through and look at some of these images. But, yeah, I'll go through and I'll look at it. Thanks for that message that came in. If there's any one particular one you want me to look at, if you see it on your phone or something, just send me a link. I can see that right here through the text messaging, and I'll be able to look at that. 314-436-7900, and I'll check it out there. But thanks for tipping me off on that. There's three stories, actually, that I want to get to, and I've been meaning to talk about these things. I just never had a chance to on the show. But there's three stories from overseas. Where do we want to start? Here's one in the AP. An Indian man died after being sucked into an MRI machine while visiting a relative at a hospital in Mumbai. 32-year-old yanked towards the machine by its magnetic force after entering the room carrying an oxygen cylinder, the police say. Now, I'm not talking about this because I think it's crazy that it happened. I'm talking about it because what the government decided to do. The state government announced that he'll be compensated for the loss of the family member. The family member will get paid because they found themselves at fault, I guess. 500,000 rupees. That translates to $7,800 American. Could you imagine you lose someone that's a family member, someone that you love and close to you? Can you imagine that they say, okay, we're bad. Here's $7,800. Wow, you got to be kidding. So I got to imagine they weren't too happy, or maybe they were thrilled. I have no idea. It could be either or. So yeah, that was kind of a crazy story. That's the only thing that looked crazy to me, was mostly because of how that's the compensation they'd be able to get for something like that. All right, how about this one? In China, they want to do this too. There's a $4,500 electric SUV that's using facial recognition to unlock doors, has Amazon Alexa to entertain inside a 49-inch screen televisions inside this thing. Now, 49-inch may seem like unreasonable for a car, but it's like super widescreen. So when you go from diagonal corners and it's super wide, it's not like your regular monitor size or your regular TV size. It's like stretched out even wider. 49-inch screen is a little deceptive. They say that this could be the car of the future. So China drove to curb pollution and reduce dependence on imported oil, coupled with generous government subsidies, is spawning dozens of new energy automobile startups, what's already the world's biggest market for vehicles. So China is the world's fastest growing and biggest EV market, but at the same time, it's short of global players and companies producing products that can compete with the best premium players in the world. So this is what they want you to do. They're going to put these facial recognition stuff in here. They'll be monitoring you when you drive. And who knows, maybe even reporting you to the Chinese government if they don't like what you're doing while you're driving. I don't know. That's the kind of stuff you'd expect in China. So the newest competitor is Byton, formerly known as Future Mobility Corp, is the first model to be available, starting at $45,000, compared to the $35,000 base of the Tesla Model 3. I don't know too many people with Teslas. In fact, I've never actually been in a Tesla. I've always been curious what it's been like in there. But when Tesla put out a $35,000 car, like the base value, I remember people were signing up like crazy. You couldn't even reserve one and wait in line. It was so, so in demand. Today, less than 1% of all vehicles sold in the U.S. are battery electric. So there's much work to be done on the increased consumer demand on electric vehicles. You know, I'm not too much of a fan of electric vehicles. Here's a couple of the things that they say are selling points. 80% battery can be recharged in 30 minutes. To me, that's crazy. If you're in a vehicle that has a driving range of about 250 miles, or if you get the upgraded model, 320 miles, four-wheel drive variant, you can charge 80% of your battery in 30 minutes. How hot is that battery? Like, is that going to melt right up into your backside? Are you sitting right on top of that thing? Man, that thing's got to be super hot. And how many times are you going to be replacing the battery in the lifetime of the car? Isn't that crazy? Like, there's got to be, if you're going to be charging a battery that quickly, it's got to hurt the overall lifespan of that battery. And that's some of the things you have to factor in. I was reading people that buy these electric cars with these giant batteries in them, they don't realize they also have to factor in the cost of replacing the battery every so often. It's not a lifetime battery on those things. So there's a lot of cost. You think you're going to save money on gas, but it's just not there yet. Human-vehicle interaction incorporates voice recognition, touch control, biometric identification, and hand gestures. So who knows? Who knows? The concept supports video and teleconference capability. You know exactly what you want to do when you're driving about 70 down the interstate. That's on Bloomberg. One other story I wanted to get to, and this is where it could be sensitive. I mean, this could be a little sensitive topic. Some people would be too afraid to bring up a topic like this on the radio. But you know what? On Overnight America, we do not hold back. Actually, this was on KMOX.com. Do women need bigger parking spaces? Are mothers really so distracted behind the wheel that they need their own row of supersized parking spots? I should bring this up to my wife and ask her. You know what she'd probably say? Oh, that would actually be really nice. Ryan, you don't know. You don't know what it's like when you pull in and you got to try to get a kid out and you don't have a lot of space because the person parked close next to you and you're trying to maneuver this and you don't want to bump the car door. I need some extra space. This is what my wife would say to me. China's women-only car parking spaces, branded as a high-heel show on a bright pink background, have drawn heavy criticism for being sexist and fuel the narrative that women are poor drivers. You know, I don't care. If they want to put on women's spaces because they're afraid every time someone comes in, they're going to bump their cars. You know, they already have preferential treatment for women. They have the pregnant women parking space. Is that sexist or is that wrong that they have parking spaces for women that are pregnant? I mean, it'd be essentially the same thing, right? You're having some kind of preference based on your sex, okay? I have a feeling the women that would use this sort of thing would be absolutely fine with having the nice, large parking spaces. And maybe, if you're lucky, you might have actually find, like, for me, it's an automatic. I'm always going to back up into a parking space. Like, if I go into a parking lot, I'm already looking, and then I'm going to back into the space. It's a guarantee for me, unless I can pull forward all the way. Because when I want to leave, I just want to pull forward. I don't want to have to back up. My wife is complete opposite. She will never, ever back into a space. Now, imagine if she had a little extra space. Maybe that could change the things. The women parking spaces are closer to the exits and monitoring systems, which are more convenient for female drivers to take a break or go shopping in the main building, much safer, especially at night. Oh, they make it safer. So if you're afraid to walk through the parking lot at night, well-lit and secure areas. See, it's getting better already. Highway service area manager argued, according to the Straits Times. This is something that was on camox.com. like last week, but I've been waiting to talk about it. The controversial spaces now sparked a debate in the UK after a mother of four appeared on the daytime talking show The Morning to support the wider spaces. Social media reaction generally against the wider spots. I don't see why they would be. Wouldn't that be great if there was like, here's guy parking? Man, I'd be all for it. You can only pull forward. Don't even have to worry about backing in. Always pulling forward. Social media, though, not too happy with it. Chinese officials claim local providences have spent nearly $11 million to create a safer and more convenient environment for women. You know, they're trying to solve a problem. What's that problem? Some women have a hard time getting into parking spaces. They don't feel comfortable going through a parking lot at night where some areas are not well lit. They don't like to go too far from a building. And these retailers figured out if they put the bigger spaces closer to the front of the building, you'll get more women shoppers to come spend money. Do it. It's a big win. It seems to me like a win-win. Now, you may think to yourself, oh, what a crazy sexist thing. No. This is what you need to do. If the first thing you thought of is, wow, that's what a sexist thing China's doing, all you need to do is extend your hand out all the way, get ready to slap yourself in the back of the head and realize, stop thinking that way. Not everything has to be like that. Just stop it. All right, coming up in the next hour, we got an interview I want to air, and you may have heard it a little bit earlier, but it's with Austin Peterson, and he's actually running for Senate here in the state of Missouri. I don't know a lot about Austin Peterson, at least I didn't before the interview, but I was able to learn a lot about him thanks to the interview, and I wanted to explore it with you. So if you want to hear about his platform, what he is going to be running on, he's going to be running as a Republican. You may remember him. I think he came in second on the Libertarian card during the last presidential election behind Gary Johnson. He had a lot of support, a lot of backing. He's still in here in Missouri, and now he's going to be running as a Republican to take on Claire McCaskill in the Senate race. If you want to learn about him, that's coming up in the next hour. You can also get it at KMOX.com in the podcast section. Email me, ryan.recker@KMOX.com. So for Night America, only here at KMOX.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.